This is a case that many in Connecticut are following very closely, even lawmakers keeping an eye on it, because it could be a central reason for looking at legislation, including even homeschooling and certainly fixing the systems in place for some of our state agencies like DCF. We're talking about the case of Jacqueline Torres Garcia, a 12-year-old girl whose body was found outside an abandoned New Britain home earlier this year. And one of the reporters in Connecticut that has been following this very closely and getting access to surveillance footage, camera footage from police, documents, all of that, is investigative reporter Jeff Dedarian from News 8. And he joins us now. I always love to talk to Jeff because I think he does excellent work. And in particular, Jeff, you've been really covering this case a lot. I know you're a father. I know you care about local news, but you've taken a real interest in this case and have been doing a lot of digging, it looks like.
Yeah. Hey there, Melissa. Good morning. Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it. Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, right? We've both been doing this a long time. And, you know, I know that you're a parent. I'm a parent. And even if you don't have kids, right, the details of this one. And again, we should point out that, you know, nobody's been found guilty. These are just allegations at this point. But we do know one thing. We do know is that Jacqueline Torres Garcia is not here anymore, and that her remains were found in that plastic bin in New Britain. So who did it? How it happened? That'll all get flushed out. Who's guilty? Who's not? But that fact remains that little girl is not here anymore. And so I think, you know, we've taken an interest in the case just because of it's sort of captured Connecticut and even gone beyond Connecticut and, you know, making national headlines, local headlines. And then what we did last night at WTNH.com, Catherine Hauser from News 8 and myself, we took a look, a real closer look, a deep dive at these body cam videos that they released. They released something like 24, 25 separate body cam videos. I went through all of them. Watched all of them, nearly 150 minutes, couple of hours total of video, more than that. And it takes you, Melissa, inside how they arrested these three. You've got Carla Garcia. She's the mom of Jacqueline. You've got the aunt, who's also named Jacqueline Garcia. And then you've got the boyfriend, Jonathan Anita. So these body cam videos really, you know, they sort of take you along with investigators, with police, with detectives, as they, you know, make these arrests. And Carla Garcia, is the mom, is talking at the police station and saying she's worried about her kids, and she's got five kids, and, you know, she talks about Jacqueline a little bit. I mean, it's fascinating in one way as a reporter, but it's also, it just, you know, the web of this story just continues to get bigger. And someone had said to me, just when you think this story cannot get any worse.
It does.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff, talk a little bit about some of the key findings that you've discovered as you've been uncovering more and more about this case. Because the line you just said, I honestly think you have said in a lot of your social media posts, like, just when I thought I couldn't uncover something more gruesome or egregious or awful about this case, you do. You fall into it. And that's, you know, I'm sure like any case. But what have you found to be some of the key takeaways? I mean, you're looking through hours of footage and reading through pages and pages of documents. What are you gathering at this point? Like you said, no one has actually been sentenced to anything yet. But what has sort of been some of the key or biggest, I'd say, moments in this case so far that you've uncovered?
Well, I mean, I think we'll learn more. And by the way, all three of the suspects will be in court this Friday. They're scheduled for another conference hearing, and we'll be there for that. And, of course, we'll have coverage. I'll have coverage of that this Friday. But I think, you know, the takeaways for me is just, you know, what are the alleged circumstances that led whoever did this, led people to do this to this little girl. I can't imagine what she could have done that would, according to police, according to the warrants, according to the documents that I've seen, that, you know, little Jacqueline was tied up with zip ties and held in a corner for days, weeks. The medical examiner ruled last week that cause of death was starvation and abuse. They had, you know, allegedly had pee pads under her, wouldn't let her go to the bathroom. Their own daughter, allegedly, again, according to police. So I think some of the takeaways is people just, the human reaction, Melissa, is just to shake your head and just be like, what could it be? What could this young little angel of a girl have done to cause someone to do this? Mm-hmm. And we'll find out who did it and who gets prosecuted and who gets convicted. And we don't know yet. We don't know who they've charged three. And, you know, I think the other thing you're going to start to see is, you know, this is radio, but if you take your hand and kind of like put, you know, an arrow each going the opposite way. I didn't do it. He did it. She did it. I didn't do it. I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So I'll be curious to see from a legal point of view, do they try all three of them together? My sense is they'll try them separately.
Yeah, I would think. Well, because I'm sure that everybody has, you know, allegedly their own different roles in
right,
what Jacqueline
exactly.
went through and her murder.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, Jeff, they're going to be having another updated court appearance this week. But we don't know just yet of when a trial is going to begin.
No, we don't know. And again, this is a case that it's going to be lengthy, you know, if there's no plea deals, which we don't know that, but and you know, that's a whole separate topic. You know, will there be a plea? What it could it possibly be? We're way, way too early for that. But I think, you know, there's just going to be an enormous amount of discovery that has to be, you know, made available. And, you know, I think you've got the aunt. She's not charged with murder, Jacqueline Garcia. She's charged with, cruelty and, illegal restraint of a child. And then you have the mom, Carla Garcia, the boyfriend, Jonathan Anita, they're both charged with murder and illegal, you know, and there's also charges of illegal disposing of a body. So the mother and the boyfriend, they face more serious charges than the aunt. So you could have a situation, again, speculation kind of, but do they use the aunt to try and get to the mom and the boyfriend? That happens often. They go to the aunt and they could possibly say, look, this is what you're facing. If you testify against your sister, will she do it? We don't know. But will you testify against your sister and Anita? Then we will cut you a deal. So you're looking at X number of years, 25 years, 20 years, whatever it is. I don't know the sentence range for those crimes off the top of my head, but that's what they may do. So there's going to be a lot of legal sort of strategy that goes on. And it's already, you know, and it's already started. I mean, you know, the Anita, when they arrested him, you know, he said he had nothing to do with what happened to that girl. I'm sort of paraphrasing from the video we've got that we put up again last night at WTNH.com. You can search for it. But so he's already, you know, the officers didn't even say anything to him about Jacqueline. And the first thing he said is, I had nothing to do with that girl. Well, what do you mean you had nothing to do with the girl? We didn't even ask you about it.
Right.
So, again, there's going to be a lot of things that start to come out, but the details are just, you know, horrific, and it's disturbing to listen to, and it's disturbing to cover.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's
just horrible.
It is. Jeff, I want to ask you something when we come back from traffic and weather, and that is, after going through hours, I mean, you've been covering this story for weeks now, but after going through hours of footage, reading through documents, and really, I think, combing through so far the details that we have so far, I want to look ahead to February and the legislative session and what, if anything, lawmakers will probably take from this case and want to discuss. Like I said, I'm sure homeschooling is going to come up again. And I'm
right.
sure questions
right.
about how DCF and other state agencies run effectively is going to come up. We've got investigative reporter Jeff Dedarian with us here. And from reporter to reporter, Jeff, and I guess the thousands of listeners who are with us as well, I'd love to get your perspective on what we could maybe expect in the upcoming legislative session. I know that's kind of a long shot, but, you know, try me. I'd love to just know what you think. You know, so when we're reading through this case, we already know that the governor's kind of hinted at this. Lawmakers have said we have to look at homeschooling again. But I sort of want to look at even beyond just, I think, what's on the surface. So, for example, the schools and how they responded, DCF and what they have already shared with us, police and what they have shared with their footage. What kind of stands out to you? Because I know for myself, I think one of the most glaring pieces of information that we got, that I don't mean to, you know, point at one direction or another, but was from DCF when they said that video called a little girl who they were told was Jacqueline and it wasn't Jacqueline last year. That, to me, was one of the most disturbing pieces of information in this entire case, was the fact that we had a DCF worker FaceTiming a girl that was already dead for 4 months. That is something that stood out to me, and I just didn't know what you thought.
I mean, I think there's a lot here that has to be looked at when it comes to DCF. I mean, I would say that's where my focus would be. That's where a lot of my questions would be. Also for the school, I don't know how a girl is in the school system and then she just disappears for a year and does homeschooling and there's no checkup. And again, we don't know what they did or didn't do because they're not exactly forthcoming with the information. But the questions are, what did you do from the school point of view? What did you do? How did you monitor that the girl was safe? Did you monitor that the girl was safe? When was the last time you checked? What's the system in place? How do you know what's the status of a girl who's homeschooled and then you haven't heard from her for a year or 9 months? Does anybody check? Does anybody wonder what's happening with Jacqueline Garcia? That's question number one for the school. The other questions for DCF is they had interactions with the Torres Garcia family for mm-hmm. other siblings.
Mm-hmm.
There are reports that were generated. They haven't released those reports. They say it's not relevant to what happened to Jacqueline. I disagree. As someone who advocates for public information and public documents and Freedom of Information Act, that, you know, and as do you, Melissa, that's just not acceptable, that the information's not being made public. Why? Why should it should be? We should have access to those documents because, again, DCF was involved with this family on some level. Okay, in some shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
Did they know about, they claim they didn't know about any starvation. They didn't know about any abuse for Jacqueline. Well, how do we know that? We need, as journalists, right, Melissa, we need to be, you know, you need to show that to us. And let's make sure that's really accurate. So, again, DCF is really going to have to come under the microscope on this with the legislative session. But it can't just be, and sorry, I'll stop in a second, but
it can't just
be like, oh, let's appoint a blue ribbon commission and we're going to have a press conference and everybody's going to stand up there and say they're going to fight for Jacqueline. People should not accept that, okay? It should be concrete, tangible evidence of an improvement to the system, because the system failed this little girl.
Yeah, I agree.
No doubt about it.
Well, and I do know that there is a very active petition for Mimi's Law. It's already got over 25,000 signatures, and it would address some of the things you're talking about. And it's kind of a combination of the things you're saying, you know, DCF accountability, but also kind of having systems in place. And I always use this as something to think about. And I know it's complicated. It's not as simple as just, you know, easy math here. But I look at, you know, if you're somebody who did wrong by a child, and I get it, sometimes it's a total misunderstanding, but when you've done something egregious, like let's talk about the fact that Jacqueline Torres Garcia was born and her mom was in custody. Okay, so she was already born into a disaster. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. And so when you have that kind of a record, I treat it a lot like I would. Honestly, I have recovering alcoholics in my family. They've been sober for many, many years, but they still say I am a recovering alcoholic. You're still always going to check in. How are things going? Are you feeling tempted? Do you want to go to that wedding? Do you feel comfortable doing that? And it's not because you don't trust that they have changed. But you can't ignore the fact that you have a record. And I just think that we don't strike that balance with DCF and especially with homeschooling. If you're somebody who has a record with DCF or you have done wrong by a child, until they can speak for themselves legally and make decisions for themselves to live in another home or get away from you or whatever they need to do, I just think we don't do enough to protect that vulnerable population. It might be a small one, but it's still one that's significant.
Yeah. And again, I think I'm repeating myself a little bit, but again, this family had a history with DCF. So it's not acceptable to say, well, look, we didn't know. Everything seemed fine. There was, you know, a white picket fence and flowers outside. There was never any issues. We were never there. We never responded, etc. So I think, you know, that answer is not just not viable here.
Yeah.
It's just not.
So, yeah.
And I think, you know, that there has to be more accountability and more answers from DCF because, you know, there's just too many questions here. There's just too many questions. And that'll be a whole separate side to this other than the criminal case, right? So the criminal case will be on its track. It will go forward, and we'll see how all that progresses. But yeah, you've got the two issues here. You've got the criminal track, and then you've got the legislative legal side, and homeschooling and looking at that. And listen, I've heard from homeschool advocates. They're like, look, don't paint a broad brush about homeschooling.
Correct. I get
that.
This
family did this allegedly.
Right.
So I think you're going to see some of that too, because people are afraid in the homeschooling community that they're getting painted with this broad brush. Like, everybody who homeschools their kids are bust outs, and they don't know what to do, and it's all the wild, wild west. And I've heard from moms who are like, look, that's not true.
Yeah. So yeah. And that's fair too.
Issue here.
It is. It's a very emotional issue. It is. It is. And Jeff Dedarian, I want to thank you for the work that you do. Again, in my opinion, one of the best investigative reporters we have in the state of Connecticut. And I really appreciate being able to collaborate and work with you and all the work that you've done on this case and will continue to do. We'll keep tracking it as well. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk soon.